Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 30 of the Pop Culture Coram Deo podcast. I am your congested host, Jeff Wright, or I should say co-host. I'm here with the other regular host of this show, Jared Moore, and we're getting ready to talk about Monster Squad, one of Jared's favorite movies, right, Jared?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite. I think it's an underrated horror flick from back when I was a kid. And, dude, I think I actually, the first time I watched it was I'd gotten some old VHS tapes from somewhere, and it was just, this was one of the movies on it. And I think The Chud, you ever heard of that?
Oh yeah, man, I hadn't thought about that one in a long time.
And so anything horror flicks, man, I was trying to watch, and that's how I ended up watching The Monster Squad. Somebody had recorded it, and I'd somehow ended up with the VHS, like, I guess they recorded off TV.
Yeah, you know, back in the day, tell you my socioeconomic background. Back in the day, I can remember buying VHS movies that, like, someone had recorded off TV and got four movies on one VHS cassette. I'd find them at like yard sales, or we would go to flea markets, and there would be people out there selling movies like that. And I didn't think a thing in the world about buying a nice, 120 minutes worth of pirated movies back in the day.
Dude, that may have been what this was. Like, it was, I think The Chud and The Monster Squad were on the same thing.
Yeah. I would believe it if it was, because that was just the sort of thing that you would find. I also remember that when my family had, I think I mentioned it on here before, my family had the big, like, super huge satellite that actually moved on a motor searching for signal in the night sky. And when we would get like an HBO free preview or something, I would buy up a bunch of empty VHS cassettes, or like go find old ones and record over, try to tape as many movies as I could to get me through to the next free preview.
That's so funny, man.
Like, yeah.
Hey, dude, just going through IMDb, did you see who the writer was of this movie?
I know Shane Black's involved, and I know Decker was somehow involved. Who are you referencing?
Black.
Oh, yeah. I totally think you have a type when it comes to your movies.
I must, man. That's hilarious. I did not know that.
Really? I'm surprised by that. When I saw it, I was like, oh, of course Jared likes this movie. Shane Black's involved.
I had no idea. Huh. That's funny.
Well, you learn something new every day, Jared Moore. That's what we're here to do on the Pop Culture Coram Deo podcast. We're here to educate.
Educate me.
Hey, speaking of educating you, you don't have to go into too many details if you don't want, but our listeners were, they heard you last week, have trepidation about a meeting with Dr. Wellam regarding your PhD work. Did that go well? Were our prayers answered for your deliverance?
I don't know if they were answered, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel. It just means more work for me. Like, Wellam's brilliant, and he made some suggestions that mean more work for me, but it means a better dissertation too. So, I'm not looking forward to more work, but, you know, I enjoy the research. I don't enjoy the critique, even though I need it. Like, these guys are, 20 years down the road and brilliant. And so, I don't know. I enjoy the research. I don't like sending my papers in and then them getting ripped apart and getting them back. And I know it's good for me, but it's good for you. Like what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. You know?
Yeah. Well, hey, look, man, if I can help you that way, I'm happy to like call you and just be critical of stuff you've done. If it'll just kind of help you get used to that, thicken up your skin. I'm happy to serve you in that way.
That would be great. Are you Baptist? You must be a Baptist church member.
No comment.
Actually, probably just a church member anywhere. You know, we would tend to see be hypercritical of one another unless it's somebody you love. And then love covers a multitude of sins.
Yeah, that's totally the case here. And if like that was a Presbyterian making fun of Baptists, I'd be like, hey, wait a minute, you back right up. It's also the kind of thing like we can joke about our own tribe, but can't let nobody else do it. Yes. All right, man. Well, let me draw us into our first official segment. And look, I'm going to name this segment officially. So, hey, welcome to Historic Moments in the Pop Culture Coram Deo podcast. This first section, I've kind of referred to it in different ways. I'm just going to name it What You're Watching. And I'm going to find some kind of audio for that. It can cover what you're reading, what you're listening to, but we're going to call it this first segment, What You Watching. So,
dude, please, please find the most redneck person you can get saying that, like for the clip, like What You Watching, or you know what I'm saying? Like a, I don't know. I think that'd be great.
So the most redneck thought. Person I can find?
Yeah.
What are you doing after we record the podcast?
I walked right into that. You're right.
Shout out to you, Mark Lamprecht. Didn't he say this show should be called Hillbillies Talk About Movies?
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly what he said. The first time he listened to it, evidently we have accents, man. I don't think it's true. I think everybody else talks weird, not us.
Yeah, I think mine's just generally European, right? Just a little touch of sophistication and class.
Yes. Yes. I evidently have one, but dude, there are people in my church who are country. Mm. My father-in-law is country.
Yes, he is. In the best sense of that word. Absolutely. He is a national treasure. And if our listeners don't know him, I'm really sorry. I wish you had that chance. I hope after you fall at the feet of Jesus when you get to heaven, I hope Mike Vaughn's one of the first people you get to meet, because it'll be a treat.
Absolutely.
All right, man. So in what you're watching, I'll just tell you straight up, man, this week I have been watching basically one thing. And we don't probably have to comment on our perspectives, but I'm just curious if you've paid any attention. The only thing I have felt like watching this week is the Kavanaugh trial. Have you watched any of that?
I have not watched. I've just read.
Dude, I have never been more depressed about the future of our society. It's a sewer. But, I mean, it's one of those deals, you know, the cliche about watching a train wreck or watching a car wreck on the interstate. You just can't look away. It's absolutely what it is. Mm-hmm. In fact, I got my wife absorbed into it, too. She was blissfully unaware, except, you know, she knew the issues. She would ask me, like, hey, how's things going? What's the lay of the land? But Wednesday or Thursday night, I can't remember. Oh, actually, I guess it would have been Thursday night. I had turned on C-SPAN as I was getting the kids ready for bed. And I thought when they're in bed, I'll come back out here and see where things lay. And I came back in there and she was just staring at the TV like the little girl from Poltergeist. And
yeah.
She turned to me and she said, can we just watch this all night? And that's what we ended up doing. We watched it for like 2 or 3 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So anyway, all I've been watching is Kavanaugh and distressing and bemoaning and bewailing. I'm really close to tearing my clothes and sitting in sackcloth and ash. Tell me you've been watching something better.
I've been watching, well, I watched SVU, the season premiere, and it was 2 episodes. And they tried to basically make, it was an issue of toxic masculinity and, killing animals and like hunting and was
did toxic
wrong.
Masculinity kill some animals?
It did. And there was a boy who wasn't toxic and it's SVU, so it's, you know, there's some perverse things going on there as well. But what I wanted to talk about, what frustrated me is at the very end, spoiler alert if you haven't seen the episodes, but at the very end of the show, one of the detectives is pregnant, and she makes a negative comment about Roe versus Wade. And the head detective, Olivia, talks with her about it some, and then she asks her, says, are you thinking of getting an abortion? And the girl's evidently thinking about getting an abortion. And Olivia tells her, you know, even though I would fight to the death or something like that for your right to do that, I want you to know that regret is an awful thing to live with. And I was like, what? Wait a minute. Why you got regret over a clump of cells? Like,
yeah,
it just does not. It's so hypocritical. It just crawls all over me.
Well, hey, can I just say a word on their behalf? I'm
sure.
I'm really surprised they even mentioned the possibility of abortion regret.
Yes. And that's the thing. Like, I think the tide is turning.
Yeah.
And it's slow. It's like a ship, but it's turning. I mean, in my anthropology seminar in my doctorate, Dr. Allison taught it. He made us read a book. It was like a giant picture book, but it was written by an atheist, and it all it does is talks about human life, and it's these magnified pictures of a human embryo from conception all the way to the end. And so you got this atheist who's pro-life.
Yeah.
And it's based on, and so in other words, science is proving what the Bible proved long ago, you know, that life, personhood begins at conception. And, but anyway, so I'm hopeful, but it irks me the utter hypocrisy of, oh, I will fight for your right, but you're going to regret this for the rest of your life. And I'm like, wait a sec. Like, it's like that Denny Burke referenced it one time. It was from a Times Magazine article. You know what it is, I believe, Jeff. The lady who's basically arguing in favor of well, it might have been shortly after Roe versus Wade, but she had gotten an abortion, and she didn't have time for – she didn't – at the time, it was her third child. They didn't think they had time for a baby and all this stuff. And so the whole article is arguing for her right to do that. At the very end, though, she makes a statement about every now and then I see a ghost, and that ghost waves at me, and I say, I do have time for you. I do. I mean, it was just like taking a knife and stabbing your heart. Gosh, I mean, yeah. This and golly, how do you? So she's that whole time she's arguing this article for the right to murder your baby, and at the very end, to the whole time denying that it's a baby, and at the very end confessing that this ghost is haunting her. You know, clumps of cells don't haunt you.
Yeah. Gosh, I feel so bad for that woman, man. I mean, that's the thing about the conscience. You can tamp it down. You can tamp it down. You can tamp it down. Eventually, it bubbles back up.
Oh, yeah. There's no telling how that has negatively impacted her entire life. Like,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
My goodness. My goodness.
And we're in a cultural moment where we're more attuned to the welfare of women in a good way. I mean, I don't think everything about Me Too and the, you know, ramifications of it have been positive, but we are thankfully more attuned to the way women are mistreated right now. And yet it seems like we're just unwilling to say, hey, look at the emotional toil that it takes on the mothers when they choose abortion. I don't want to turn this all into an abortion bash. I'll say this up front again. I'm just thankful they admit that regret takes place. But since you raised the topic and we're just sort of marveling in the most awful sense of the word at the atrocity of abortion in our day. Mm-hmm. We had a guest come into the school I teach at this week, and he was speaking to some of the students, and in his talk, he just mentioned a stat I had never heard before, but I've since found cited on, you know, credible websites like the Wall Street Journal, for instance. Apparently in New York City last year, there were more African-American children aborted than born.
Oh, my goodness. That is awful.
It is the singular great moral crisis of our lifetime, man. And God bring it to an end. Absolutely ASAP.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. I hope that it comes to an end in my lifetime. And I hope that my kids see the day when they look upon abortion the way we look on Nazi Germany. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Give us another Wilberforce moment. Let it be changed. Let moral sanity be regained and let it end.
Absolutely.
Well, that's a somber note.
I know, man. I'm sorry.
Can I try something more lighthearted?
Absolutely.
Not as a palate cleanse, but because I got a new toy and I want to run it by you.
Sure.
So we're doing the Monster Squad because, and we're going to talk more about this here in just a moment, but Jared, you created a 31 days of horror for people with consciences that don't like nudity, gratuitous gore, sexual stuff in their movies. And so we're kicking that off with an episode reviewing one of your favorite horror movies, the Monster Squad. In that same vein, I don't know if you heard about this, but I just got my copy of the new Trivial Pursuit Horror Edition, and I don't have anybody to play it with because my wife doesn't know anything about horror movies. So you want to take a turn?
Absolutely, man. We need to get me, you, Jody, and DZ and get together and play that thing someday.
Yes, we do. That's
like Halloween night or something.
That's our special edition of the Pop Culture Quorum Deo, right? You can get this bonus episode for no additional cost. So here, let me tell you the categories, and sure. I'm going to roll the dice. I'll pick a card for you. Category number one is monster. Category number two, gore/disturbing, which sounds terrible. Third category is psychological. Fourth is paranormal. Fifth is slasher. And sixth is international. So are you ready?
Oh, goo. Dude, this sounds like rough.
I got the SNL Trivial Pursuit once upon a time. Thought I knew everything about Saturday Night Live. I couldn't keep up, man. Yeah, I knew nothing. So we'll see here. Is there any category you're rooting for?
Paranormal or slasher or what was the first one?
Monster.
Monster, yeah.
All right. So the die falls on purple, Jared. You won because you got monster.
Okay.
Let's see here. Drawing a card at random. I know this is riveting podcasting. All right, Jared. Here is... Oh, this is so easy. Yeah, you're going to kill this one. So, Jared, the question. Night of the Living Dead in 1968 was filmed in what type of monochrome form?
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's on there.
I have no idea.
Are you for real?
Are you kidding me?
It is a classic film of any genre. The original Night of the Living Dead?
Monochrome form? What in the world does that mean?
Okay. Let's use our etymology here. Mono being singular. Chrome referring to color palette.
Okay. Oh, black and white?
Black and white. There you go, Jared. You're a horror movie genius.
Hey, this is the Hillbilly Pop Culture Show. They need to speak English.
All right, guys. Like we said, our job here at Pop Culture Corumdale is to teach. And you can see the expertise with which we are working here.
That's exactly right. I've almost got a PhD, but it's in theology, chrome, whatever, mono. I know what mono means, but...
Yeah, because you got it all the time, right? I knew you in high school.
Whatever. Hush.
Uh-huh. All right.
Never mind.
No more trotting out the scandalous details of Jared's background.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, let's put a plug in this one. You need to come over and play this Trivial Pursuit Horror Edition with me. That'll wrap up, though, this inaugural edition of What You Watching. So, hey, listeners, congratulations on being along with us for that maiden voyage. That brings me up to our next regularly scheduled segment, which we call...
So Sorry to Interrupt!
And, Jared, just a few things to throw at you this week. One of those is, did you see that we got an early steal from Tom Hanks' portrayal of Mr. Rogers?
I see that, man. That is pretty cool.
Yeah. I don't think he looks a lot like Mr. Rogers in his face, but you can tell he's lost weight, and they've certainly got the outfit right. And I'm totally willing to trust Tom Hanks to handle this well.
Oh, yeah, man. He can. I'm sure he can do it. It's just... It's hard for me to look at Hanks. I mean, this almost looks like Forrest Gump a little bit.
Like older Forrest Gump.
Yeah. I mean, that's funny. I mean, as far as the body type and
Okay, well, that makes sense. I hadn't thought about that, but I see what you're saying now. Here's the premise for the movie. It's called I think You've Got a Friend, which sounds like Toy Story as well. But yeah. Nonetheless. The film is inspired by a real-life friendship between Fred Rogers and award-winning journalist Tom Ginod. In the story, a cynical journalist begrudgingly accepts an assignment to write a profile piece on the beloved icon and finds his perspective on life transformed. I'm happy that we're having a cultural moment with Fred Rogers. You know, we talked about maybe trying to find the documentary that came out a while back and cover it on this on one of the episodes of the show, and we never did that. But it's pretty clear to me that... We're looking for male role models that can be trusted, and that Fred Rogers has kind of bubbled up to the surface. And I'm happy for that. I don't know Fred's theology, but I do know that he seemed to comport himself as a gentleman in his public and private life. And so if history is going to look back on him kindly, I think I'm cool with that.
Me too, man. Me too. I'm sure I'll catch this. I'll catch that documentary too. I will say this, though, that back in the day, man, those puppets, do you know the puppets on Mr. Rogers?
Oh, yeah. Did they scare you?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
They freaked me out a little.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jared. Do you remember he did like a horror movie version of that where there was this guy named Evil Forking Knives or something?
What?
Yeah, there was like a multi-parter episode, and this guy named Evil Forking Knives or Forking Spoons or something. Came into Never Never Land. And anyway, I've always thought I'm going to track that down.
Wait a second. Evil Fork and Knives. Is it called Never Never Land?
What did I say?
Did we just Peter Pan?
Did I say Never Never Land?
You did.
I'm sorry. What is it called? The place where Charlie goes and that Daniel Tiger now lives.
It can't be Never Never Land. Okay. I don't know what it is. But I just got Michael Jackson in my head.
Yeah, let's not go there. Let's not do any of that.
I got Peter Pan, and now I got the puppets, so you're really messing with... There was Dude, I need to see this. They scared me like the good ones scared me. I can't imagine Evil Fork and Knives.
Yeah, I remember the little Daniel the Tiger puppet. like being really freaked out by evil Mr. Fork and Knives or whatever. So if any of our listeners understand anything about what I'm talking about, please point me in the right direction. I'm sure it's on YouTube or something.
Dude, I've got to go run this down, but I might not be able to sleep tonight.
I hope you can't. I hope you can't.
I'm going to call you or text you or you just drive down, knock on your door.
You just wake up and work on that PhD when the puppets come to scare you.
Yes, that's exactly right.
In the same vein, we got a new steal from, maybe the first steal from Rocket Man, Taron Egerton's story of, or biopic about Elton John. So the premise on this one is the story of Elton John's life from his years as a prodigy at the Royal Academy of Music through his influential and enduring musical partnership with Bernie Taupin. Jared, are you a fan of Elton John?
I love Elton John as far as, I mean, musician. He'll go down. I mean, he's a living legend. I mean, he'll go down in history, kind of like the way that I look at Queen and people look at Queen now.
Greatest pop piano player of all time.
Yeah, they will. I mean, I think future generations, like when these guys pass away and nobody replaces them for like 30 or 40 years, you know, people keep going back to them. I think that's what's happened with Queen. I mean, who is compared to Freddie Mercury since he's been gone?
Yeah, I mean, we had a minute where like Coldplay was going to be the next big thing. I mean, I guess U2 in some ways differently, not from a performance place, but just the spectacle of the show. But you're right. You're right. There's not really a lot of contenders for greatest rock and roll frontman. I mean, I guess Mick Jagger just on longevity, but
yeah,
it's a short list.
Yeah, like think about like even going back to The Lion King and the songs that came out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable how much talent this guy's got.
Yeah, I'm with you. The most recent tour where he and Billy Joel were touring together.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking, I mean, the tickets were just way out of our price range, but Chrissy and I wanted to go so bad. We were looking at selling plasma. I mean, we were not quite, but we were just desperate to go. And I think it's going to be one of those deals where I'm like, you know, bouncing a kid on my knee and telling them, yeah, Grandpa Jeff should have went to see Elton John when he had a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So with both those projects, you're interested in seeing both of them?
I am tentatively on the Rocket Man. I just hope they focus on, I don't know.
Yeah, I hope it's not scandalously investigating his sexual proclivities. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, I don't think you can tell the story without it, but I also hope that they don't turn it into, the main focus of the movie. So
Right. Same way with this new Queen movie coming out. Is it October?
I don't remember. But yeah, I hope to see that on opening weekend. Yeah. And truth be told, obviously, as evangelicals, part of the Reformed tradition, we don't believe that homosexuality is God's will for his image bearers. But truth be told, I wouldn't want to see the same thing played out in Mick Jagger or any other sort of licentious rock star's life when we do their biopic. I have no interest in swimming in those waters.
Mick Jagger has got to have like, I mean, if the rumors are true.
we probably don't have to go much further. You've probably already given us. Yeah.
Yeah, that's just gross.
Anyway. Not a chaste man. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to look forward to both of those and hope for the best out of both. But to really get us transitioning here, though, the only other thing I've got to talk to you about is this 31 Days of Horror movie list that you released. Can we talk about that for a little while?
Yeah.
All right, man. Where did you get this idea from?
It may have been from Jody.
So listener Jody Webster, who's been involved with our podcast offline, just listening and giving us feedback on the show. He's a friend we've known for many years. So you want to tell him what Jody's doing that inspired you?
He's got a scare-a-thon that he did. I remember he did it last year. It was the first time it was on my radar, but this might be his third year.
I think this is second.
Oh, okay. Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, that's a great idea. Now, it's hard to watch a movie every night in October, but that would be fun. I mean, I enjoy horror movies, and I think it's a safe place to be scared. And not only that, but there's usually a clear good and a clear evil, and it kind of backfires against the postmodern, you know, moral relativism and the denial of the supernatural. You know, it kind of runs roughshod. Horror runs roughshod against most of those. And so I thought it'd be a cool idea. And, you know, in the spirit of this show, we don't want to violate folks' consciences. And so particularly, you know, we base it on our own conscience. So what violates our consciences is primarily nudity and sexuality. And overt crude humor. I mean, if there's a lot of it, you know, I can't tolerate a ton of it. And so we've tried to keep that criteria. And we also wanted to put out good horror, right? We wanted to put out, if there is gore, it's warranted. You know, there's not just gore for gore's sake. Yeah. You know, I put The Thing on the list. And, you know, it is a gory movie, but I think it's warranted because of, you know, the atrocity that this alien and what this alien is doing. And not only that, but it's very, I don't know if witty is the right word, but very unique. I mean, that is a unique movie. I think The Thing is how you've got this monster in plain sight. And I just thought it was, I've had some complaining about the goriness of that movie since I released the list. And so, but that's why that list is on, why that movie's on that list.
Well, I'm glad you addressed that. That was one I was going to ask you about. I'll tell you, for me, you know, you and I sort of collaborate a little bit on that list, and we have sort of the same sensibilities when it comes to horror movies. I don't think of The Thing as particularly gory because it's not happening to people. You know, the craziness that takes place is it's happening within the body of an alien who replicates mm-hmm. human beings. And so I can watch The Thing all day long and not care at all about the splatter.
Yeah.
But I couldn't watch 35 minutes of Saw without feeling like it had gone too far.
Yeah. And even The Walking Dead, I think, goes too far, you know. And after, I don't think The Thing is as bad as The Walking Dead as far as goriness.
Yeah.
And so that's why, you know, folks complaining, I wonder if they know what all's out there. Like, there's a lot of, man, there's too much gore, isn't there?
Well, I think so. I think it's sort of the equivalent of crass humor comedy movies. It's just the easiest thing to do. Let's get chunks of red stuff and throw it at the camera. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Again, for me, it really does. And I'm not saying that anybody has to agree with me on this. It's just my blind spot. I think I've told the story on here. The first movie on your list is Muschietti's It from 2017, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I loved that movie, and I think we watched it in the theater the first time I saw it. Went back and told my wife, hey, look, this is a horror movie you're going to enjoy because it's a coming-of-age story, and she trusted me. And I knew that she hates seeing kids hurt in horror movies. She hates it with a passion.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just watching, expecting her to love that movie. And we get to an end where the monster is impersonating a little kid. And another little kid goes and shoots the little kid in the head. And she was like, don't you ever take me to another horror movie ever again. And I told her, I just didn't think of that because I knew that that was the monster impersonating a kid, not actually a little kid. So it's a pronounced difference between the two, right? Between a human being tortured or a monster who looks like a human being. But it certainly doesn't serve me particularly well when I'm trying to help other people, you know, avoid some of the things they don't like about horror movies. So,
yeah, that's a good call. And I mean, honestly, probably the two, as far as hard horror, the first movie on there is probably the worst one, isn't it? As far as...
Yeah, I'd say so.
And so if they can get past that first one, you know, if the first one doesn't, I guess doesn't bother you is not the right word. Cause there are things in that movie that bother me that I wish wasn't in there. But it's not enough for me to not, I mean, I can recommend all those movies with, you know, particular caveats, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to going through the list. I just looked at a couple that I thought, oh man, I can't wait to watch that again. And one of those is The Sixth Sense. I don't know that I've watched that thing. And I mean, it's been years since I've seen that. So I'm really excited to put it on. And it's on Netflix now, so it's close at hand.
Oh, that's great. I didn't realize it was on Netflix.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jared, what are you hoping for from this list? What do you hope people do with it? What do you hope the fruit of it is?
I hope that people will... you know, that people will watch these things with discernment. I think that people who enjoy scary movies would appreciate a list that is somewhat clean. You know, if there are believers out there like us, and I assume there are, and I assume it's growing, that enjoy watching horror flicks, that they would appreciate a list that doesn't have the things that violate their conscience in it.
Yeah.
And that may be a wrong assumption, but I'm assuming that most teenagers grow up watching horror movies, whether they're Christian or not. I mean, right. my sister has two young teenage girls and they are homeschooled. And so, you know, when you think of homeschool kids, you think of sheltered, but these kids, they're texting me, you know, their mom is texting me and say, what about this movie? What about that movie? Cause all their friends are watching them. And so helping them think through what to allow their teenagers to watch, you know, I'll text back, well, I think they could handle that or they can't. And like I told them not to watch Hereditary. You know, I thought it was too rough for them to watch. I particularly didn't like it either, but, I know we probably disagree on that movie, but anyways, you know, that's what I hope to accomplish. I would have appreciated a list like this, back. I mean, I don't know that there are lists like this out there because Christians are like, Christians are usually dive in or dispose, you know, either they dive into horror and just watch whatever, or they're rejecting it entirely.
Right, right. And we've talked about this in previous episodes. So guys, go back and look for the movie It in our archives.
Mm-hmm.
Get Out. I'm trying to think of what else we've done. The Exorcism of Emily Rose. We talk about why we think horror is a genre that can profit a Christian,
mm-hmm.
and how God uses it. If you want to read something on the subject, I would recommend to you Mike Doran's book, Christian Horror. It's a quick read. You can find it on Amazon. And I think he does a great job of laying out not only how Christians historically have seen horror, how they've made use of it, but how that's really rooted in what God has done. God has built horror as a genre into his word. It is appropriate sometimes to raise fears within people, and that good Christian sub-creators can do the same thing. And even image bearers who aren't self-consciously working to glorify the Lord, nonetheless, because they're made in God's image, these things will bubble up. And as they're working in the genre, they will end up giving you some of the things that God has done with the genre as well. So again, Christian Horror, Mike Doran, couldn't recommend it more strongly. One of the best punchy little reads I've read this year.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah. All right. Well, those things will be available on all of our social media. Jared has published that on the Pathos blog already. Tomorrow, we'll put that up on Facebook and Twitter, on Reddit. Anywhere you guys know where to find us, you'll be able to find that list and use it to your heart's content to, I don't know, increase the enjoyment of this year's scary season in October.
Mm-hmm.
With that in mind, Jared, we're to commemorate the launch of the 31 Days of Horror list. We are looking at one of your favorite movies, as I've already mentioned twice before in this episode, Monster Squad. Are you ready to pull the curtain on that one?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, man. So let's get going on Monster Squad. I have never seen this movie before. I don't know why. If it came out in the 80s, I feel like I saw it, but I just missed this one. But of course, that's not the case for you, as I've referenced multiple times already. So Jared, can you tell us what made you love this movie?
I think it, I don't know, as a kid, it scratched, you know, what I liked in a movie. And so it's more nostalgia now, because now I look at it and I'm like, you know, why did I like that so much, you know?
Sure.
But it was funny. It nailed middle school friendship. I mean, this is how we talk to each other as unbelievers. I think it nails exactly. I mean, I can remember that's how we talked. I mean, that's how my friends talked.
Much to our chagrin now, looking back, right? But you're right. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and to those who are going to watch the 31 Days of Horror, Muschietti's It, the first movie on the list, I think that's the strength of that movie too. You've got one friend who uses way too much foul language and blue comedy. But I feel like everybody had one friend who was like way too into cussing. And if you didn't, you were probably that friend.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't want to celebrate those things, but when you're talking about authenticity and recapturing a moment, mm-hmm. yeah, this movie does that.
And not only that, but it was also scary. Like even when I watched it again last night. Dude, the moment when the werewolf is on the phone with the dad and says he's going to, you know, he's turning into the werewolf and he's saying he's going to kill your son. I mean, that's burned in my memory.
Yeah. Well, hey, we haven't done spoiler alert yet. So you just saved spoilers, Jared Moore. This movie is a spring chicken. And there could be lots of people who are going to have the plot ruined by this wanton spoilering you're doing. But you legitimately found it a scary movie.
Well, there were scary parts in it. Like, and growing up as a kid, so in elementary school, man, my first taste of horror was in the library at Cassville Elementary School. They had these scary books. And it was exactly what's in this movie. It was Dracula. It was Frankenstein. It was what, the creature from the Black Lagoon?
Yeah.
Is that what that thing was?
Well, it clearly is. We'll talk about this more. They call it Gillman in this movie, but yeah, it's a reference to the creature.
And the werewolf and the mummy. And I read, like, these books were like maybe 50 pages, 30 pages, and they had pictures. And it was based on old movies. So I had read those in elementary school, and then this movie come out, and it's got all those characters yeah. that I've read. And so it just, I don't know, it brought all that together in a movie that would, and it basically took the books that I had seen, that I'd read, and brought them to life on the screen. And it was genuinely scary. And I, even watching it last night, some of the special effects, actually most of them, I think still held up.
Well, do you know that the same guy who did the special effects on The Predator did the special effects for this movie?
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
That explains a lot. Like, yeah.
Well, all right. I guess we'll get into the review proper here. So I'm going to use IMDb's summary of the movie. And it is: a young group of monster fanatics attempt to save their hometown from Count Dracula and his monsters. Anything you want to add to that summary, Jared?
No, that's great, man.
All right, let's get into the conscience warning then. Just thinking through elements of this movie that may provoke believers when they're watching it. There is a lot of violence in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's crude language.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a plot point. And I guess you could say in some ways the plot revolves around this. But there's this plot point about whether or not a teenage girl has lost her virginity or not. That's really quite uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And they also, there's this voyeuristic element where these young teenage boys are trying to look in her bedroom window from their clubhouse or whatever. And so, not cool, but it's in there. And if you think that's a bridge too far, we would mm-hmm. encourage you to obey your conscience and not watch this movie.
It shows her in her undies. So be aware.
Yeah. Okay. So, at that point, we're gonna go ahead and insert the spoiler warning here. So, guys, if you haven't seen this movie from 1987 and you're saving the plot details for some special moment in the future, you're gonna need to pause this episode here. Maybe go watch that movie and come back to us. But if you keep on listening, we're gonna assume you're happy to have the plot discussed and hear details, and that's how we're gonna handle it from here. So, Jared, just a few notes, because, again, I just met this movie, I guess, 2 nights ago when I watched it getting ready for this episode. Just a couple notes I want to put in front of you. One, this is a reference to what's called Universal's monsters, the things you've been talking about: Dracula, Frankenstein's monster, Creature from the Black Lagoon, so on and so forth. But I found this article on Mental Floss, which is not, you know, a website that's going to increase your IQ. But nonetheless, it had some pretty interesting details. And they said that this movie, what Black and Decker and the creative minds behind it wanted to do, was tell a Universal monster story. But since Universal didn't have the movie, they couldn't use the classic Universal monsters. So they went through and made changes to all the monsters so that they could not be considered copyright infringement on a design.
Hmm.
One of the things that they did was the Dracula character doesn't have that strong widow's peak that Bela Lugosi's Dracula does.
Oh.
And Frankenstein's monster, the neck bolts have been moved up to his temple.
Okay.
And true story, the comedic stylings of my household. Christy said that somewhere a young Steve Jobs was watching this movie and decided to invent earbuds after watching Dracula raise Frankenstein's monster.
That's funny.
Wolfman's ears are more pointy and more wolf-like. So I guess that makes sense that they made these changes and whatnot. But, man, the Creature from the Black Lagoon looked like a one-to-one. Like, I would have believed that that was an old-school Creature from the Black Lagoon costume if I didn't mm-hmm. know that they couldn't have used it.
Dude, they named them the same names, though.
Well, I think, you know, Dracula, they would be able to claim that that's rooted in Bram Stoker, right?
Oh, yeah, and Mary Shelley.
Yeah, with Frankenstein's monster. you know, Wolfman is probably too generic to copyright.
Wow.
They changed the creature from the Black Lagoon. They changed it to Gillman. And the mummy, I'm sure, too, because it's rooted in Egyptian historicity, probably can't copyright that either. And so unless you're using something that is clearly Universal's mummy, you could probably get away with it. I guess you could probably make another movie like this today.
Wow, man. That's really good. That's interesting.
Yeah. Another thing that's interesting about this movie is that Noonan, who played Frankenstein's monster, and Reger, I hope I'm saying that name right, is the guy who played Dracula. They never broke character around the kids. So,
oh, wow.
Tom Noonan said that he never let the kids see him without his monster makeup. Ashley Bank, who played the little girl who befriends Frankenstein's monster in this movie, she says, "The first time I met Tom, I was 25. I never met Tom on set. I only met Frankenstein."
Oh, wow. And that's cool.
Yeah, I love those little details. Reger did the same thing, but he did make one adjustment when he was around Ashley Bank, that little girl. Because, you know, the movie's most critical point is when he and she are in a face-to-face confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, we've already told you about spoilers. At the end of this movie, Dracula lifts the little girl, whose name is Phoebe, by the chin. And as he clutches her, his teeth get sharper, his eyes turn red, and he lets out this hiss because he's trying to frighten her. So to really get her scared, Reger made sure that Bank never saw him wearing his fangs or his crimson contact lenses. And so when the time came to shoot the moment in question, he put them on, and when she wasn't looking, so that when, you know, the action was going to roll, this would really catch her by surprise. So Decker, who knew about Reger's plan, told the little girl actress, "You're going to have to scream in this scene, you know, and act like you're scared." And she said, "Well, when?" And he told her, "Oh, you'll know." And sure enough, she did. She said, oh, wow, that her cry was 100% real.
Oh, I bet. And dude, he calls her a bad word name. Like, that's something else that got me, is calling this sweet little girl. I mean,
yeah, I think we've talked about it before. There's nothing you could pay me to let my children work in front of a camera. Nothing.
Yeah.
There's no amount of money. Last little point, and this one's heartbreaking too. Brent Chalam, who I think is how you pronounce that last name, he's the guy who played Horace, the heavyset kid.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that he died of pneumonia at 22 years old?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's terrible, isn't it?
Awful, man.
Yeah. I mean, he's maybe the most memorable kid character in this thing.
Yeah.
There is a documentary out about this movie that I thought, man, it'd be fun to track that thing down. And apparently, if you buy the right copy of this movie on Blu-ray, there's two of them. One is it's not region locked. The other is locked to region A. But the one that is not region locked has a director's commentary on it, where a bunch of the cast and creators sit in together and talk through the movie. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to give that a watch through and hear them talk about it. It's supposed to be really good.
Yeah, I'd love to see that too, man.
Well, that's a lot of introductory material, I guess. I'm just going to be straight up honest with you, Jared, and with our listeners here. I thought this movie had a lot of plot holes, and some of it just didn't make sense to me. So I'm going to rely pretty heavily on Jared for this one. What we do when we look at these movies is we ask how well they reflect the story that God is telling about his son Jesus through what we call history in the cosmos. And he's telling that story about Jesus in four stages: creation, he makes everything good; second stage, fall, creation rebels against its creator; sin enters in, and death through sin. Stage three, God remains committed to his purposes, sees to it that his original will would be accomplished, so he sends a redeemer. And then the redeemer accomplishes his mission. He's faithful and restores everything that has gone wrong in the fall and creates a better world. So when we're thinking through these movies, we want to see how well they, as sub-stories, reflect the broader story of what God's doing through Jesus. With that in mind, Jared, where do we see creational goodness in this movie?
I mean, you see a family that I believe loves one another, but that they are at each other's throats as far as a mother and a father. And you see the negative impact that's having on the son. Not only that, but you see that bullying is wrong, and you see a fellow kid try to protect the innocent from the bully, which I thought, you know, especially growing up, man, you and I both, I think, have talked about being bullied some. I was smaller than you. I think you grew, it took me a while to grow. I think you were taller than me. You're still taller than me a little bit, but
much better looking.
Yeah, that is true.
Thank you.
Yeah, you used to be a model, didn't you? Weren't you a model?
I modeled some terrible things. Modeled a lot of what not to do.
Oh, me. Where was I going? What was I talking about?
About being bullied.
Where am I?
Poor little boy being bullied. And how could that ever happen with your charming and winsome personality when we were in middle school, Jared?
Yes, I was angry all the time.
I understand that.
But anyway, yeah, it was much like my middle school. I mean, besides the monsters, that was basically how I felt in many ways. So I resonated with that, you know, and I guess in elementary school, I guess I was somewhat of a bully, with some of the other kids looking back.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, that all changed as we got older and, well, I understood more, but as far as the creation of this movie, it's supposed to be back in 87, what it was really like in modern day and the monsters, right?
Yeah, you can tell this movie really, really enjoys Spielberg movies.
Yeah.
And it's the movie that things like Stranger Things is nostalgic for.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think you hit it there. So what about Fallenness? Where do we see Fallenness here?
Fallenness is when the evil wins, basically. You know, it is a dangerous world, a wicked world, and evil must be opposed. It must be fought. It was fought by Van Helsing. Something that I thought was a little odd was there was no emphasis on, I mean, there's emphasis on crosses, I guess, but there's no emphasis on Catholicism at all.
Yeah, right? That's true.
In Van Helsing, usually tied to, I mean, I don't know. You probably know. Was he a real person?
Oh, not that I know of. Not that I know of. But you're right that the classic archetype is always, it's always rooted in Catholic imagery. But it's also because Catholics are the ones who have the rich stock of Christian totems. You know, that's a contradiction in terms, but they're the ones who carry around vials of holy water and mm-hmm. crucifixes and like venerate the host and stuff like that. I mean, you and I are evangelical, also self-consciously participants in the Reformed tradition. So we're not particularly charitable to these things in Catholicism, but I'm not looking to beat up on Catholicism here. I'm just saying that mm-hmm. if you're going to go looking for the theatrical things that you would use against a monster in a movie, well, there's only one game in town for that. It's mm-hmm. the tradition that has the relic shop and all that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is steeped in Catholic imagery normally, but here I think it's just more generic crosses and whatnot.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of disconnected from that. Even back when they go back in time, you know that.
Well, another thing I read about this movie that you're making me think of is that, I mean, it kind of is Shane Black's vision, right? And we mm-hmm. know something about Shane Black now. Apparently he wanted to do a completely different introduction to this movie. So, you know, we have this introduction where Van Helsing and his peasant teammates are raiding Dracula's castle.
Mm-hmm.
What Black wanted it to do from the beginning is that he wanted to have Van Helsing charging the castle with an army, spraying the castle with a machine gun.
Oh, wow.
And then he wanted to have these hordes of, like, brides of Dracula come riding out on horseback. Hmm. And I think it was Decker who was like, dude, we don't have, our entire budget wouldn't pay for the intro you have conceived here. And so mm-hmm. they had to scale it way back. But you can see the guy who made the Predator being like, you know what Dracula needs? Dracula needs to run up against a machine gun.
That's cool, man. That would have been interesting, but then the boys wouldn't have had the firepower that Van Helsing had hundreds of years earlier.
Well, I'm thinking there must be some kind of, this is again where this movie just doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because mm-hmm. Van Helsing just shows up again at the end when the vortex is opened again.
Yeah.
And I guess there must be some sense that he can travel through time or something.
No, he's stuck in limbo. And I guess in that limbo, literally there is no time. Like, you don't age, you're... It's kind of like from Ant-Man and the Wasp, where that what was it, where that lady was for 30 something
years. Like subspace or whatever, where it's super miniaturized. Yeah.
Yeah, super miniaturized. And what did she, would you say quantum food?
Yeah, quantum fountain of youth down there. Yep. So yeah, I get it. But anyway, maybe the vortex opened in a time he could get a machine. I don't know. I'm thinking more about this movie, I think, than the people who made it did. All I'm going to say is if Shane Black could have had the budget to do the machine gun, they would have figured out a way for it to show up in the plot.
Oh, yeah. And the kids would have had machine guns, I guess, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Now, before we leave Fallenness here, I read a guy saying that watching this movie as an adult, he didn't realize just how dark it was on an adult level. So just a couple of things he highlighted, and one that I didn't even catch. They go to talk to the scary German guy to get help translating Van Helsing's journal. Mm-hmm. And at the end, they tell him as they're leaving, like, oh, yeah, you're not as scary as we thought you were. But one of the kids says, oh, you do know a lot about monsters. And he says, I guess you do now that you mention it, or something to that effect. And he shuts the door and you see his concentration camp tattoo there.
Oh, my goodness. No.
Yeah, I caught that one and I thought, gosh, that's pretty punchy for the campiness that this movie is otherwise going for. Mm-hmm. Did you notice that when Dracula shows up to bomb the treehouse? Well, two things are going on there. One, when he does that, he thinks the kids are in the treehouse.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
So he's not going there to just blow up their fort and make a statement. He thinks they're in there.
Oh, wow.
But also, that's the time that the main character's dad, who's a cop, shows up. And you see the mom come charging out of the house, and she has her bags packed to leave him.
Oh, I didn't see that.
That's the one I'd missed, too. I'd caught the other two. But, this is a movie that is probably less frightening in terms of the universal monsters for an adult. But it's actually much more reflective of fallenness in the real world than I think you would expect looking at it as an adult.
Yeah, good call. I didn't even think of that. Does it display that as fallenness? I guess it does. These relationships are in turmoil and they're not supposed to be. And these monsters, if families come together, well, we'll talk about that. But if families come together and friends come together and fight the monsters that are outside, it's similar to what I preached this morning.
In your summer movie series?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't do that, man. I've got a savior that rose from the dead, dude. I'm not going to do a summer movie series.
Yeah, and he gave us a book too. Yeah. So I'm with you. Not to pick a fight with anybody out there, but Jared and I have strong convictions about that. What's redemptive here? Where do you see redemption?
Them coming together and fighting. I think that's the reality of that. Families basically need to quit fighting each other and fight the greater evil that is outside. Same way with friends. To come together and to fight. And I don't know. I think that's probably how redemption is accomplished, and glorification is that there are greater evils than what is going on in the relationships in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Being those like cosmic forces of evil represented by Dracula and his crew?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And the other evils, I mean, the subtle evil might be what you mentioned, the concentration thing, like the war, Hitler,
the breakdown of the family, adults who victimized children. Yeah, the one thing I'm going to talk about in redemption on the way to glorification is that this movie does a good job of highlighting. Now, of course, it's goofy, it's unrealistic, but they highlight the need to be brave in the face of evil, and that good can come. Yeah, even when the odds are tremendously stacked against you, when people choose to do the right thing in the face of evil,
mm-hmm. Especially kids. I mean, this movie gets bravery right for sure, but we can talk about that.
Yeah, I'll tell you part of a plot hole. The kid who's super cool, who wears the leather jacket, he looks like a time-lapsed Fonzie.
Yeah.
What's his name? Do you remember?
Rudy.
Rudy. I don't understand why Rudy, the older cool kid, wants to hang out with these dorks.
Yeah.
But it was super satisfying to see him show up and confront the bully who'd been picking on the heavyset kid.
Yeah.
And make that bully eat the candy bar that he had just stomped.
Yeah.
Christian and I were like, yeah, I'm really glad that's in this movie. There's a little justice for you.
Yeah.
All right. So, guys, that's us kind of chopping this movie up into component parts. We'll put it back together here and there in our analysis. So we've talked about these questions on every episode so far. The first one that we do to analyze this movie is we ask the question of what's the story, and we want to get it right. And we think we've done that in the worldview work we've just done. But one thing I want to say in this section, Jared, is the thing I've already mentioned a couple times. The plot of this movie it's just not very tight. Mm-hmm. I read that article about the director's commentary on the Blu-ray, and apparently at one point Decker says about Dracula that Dracula's got his stuff together. You know, he's got his buddies, he's got a car, but I don't really know what his plan is. And that's the director of the movie saying that. And that's exactly how I felt. Like, I'm like, well, yeah, I guess he took the time to have a customized hearse, but what's the whole deal? They're going to break the amulet. And then, you know, it's like that meme, right? Assemble the monsters is step one. Step two, get in the hearse. Step three is question mark. Step four is rule the world. And you just got to figure out step three. Yeah. And I know the amulet's important to that, but I don't really get how tipping the balance of good and evil towards evil is going to give them dominion over the world nonetheless. But anyway,
yeah,
this is not going to be the movie that you want to watch if you're super interested in tight storytelling.
Yeah, this is more like Ant-Man and the Wasp, you know, buckle up type thing.
Dude, yes, but I mean, Kevin Feige is going to beat you up if he ever hears you make that comparison. Second analysis question is, where am I? So we want to see ourselves within this imaginary world. What does it want us to think about ourselves as we participate in this movie as a watcher? So where are you in this movie, Jared?
I'm in the Monster Squad, man. I'm Sean. You know, that's who I wanted to be, or Rudy growing up, I guess. But I don't know, even the Monster Squad fighting, coming together. I mean, I grew up loving Ghostbusters, you know. I thought this movie growing up was funny, and it, not only that, but it, you know, the monsters were scary, gave me a fright. Even had the old, you know, the old tropes, the old silver bullet, the old, you know, what can kill a werewolf? I mean, it's just interesting.
Yeah.
But, as far as who am I? I think I'm, Sean, I guess. What about you?
Well, I want to be, and this is, I guess, how pitiful I am. I want to be Sean. Did you ever watch Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yes. I haven't seen all of them though.
Yeah. Well, I love that show growing up. It was on Nickelodeon. It was this group of kids who got together and told each other scary stories around a campfire. They called themselves the Midnight Society. Mm-hmm. And our mutual friend, and he's also a listener of the podcast, Derek Zuashkiani, he said that there was nothing in his world that he wanted more than to be part of a Midnight Society. And like,
yeah,
a Monster Squad or a Midnight Society, I just look back with envy on that stuff and think, man, I wish I would have done some of that. So I almost wish there was a treehouse we could have all went to and talked about, you know, read those books you're talking about, Finding at Cassville, or read Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark to each other, and done that. So,
yeah. Oh yeah, I did all this stuff on my own, man. Like, I didn't talk with anybody about this scary stuff. Like,
yeah,
it wasn't something. My best friend was, you know, Bill, and you know, we did, it was all sports and hunting and, you know, playing in the creek and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, apart from hunting, I was into all that stuff too, and was happy to spend my time doing it. But I was also the guy who was like at book fair buying the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, and everybody looking at me like, really, man, why are you into that? Or like Fear Street. I had some older cousins who would read Fear Street with me, but we just weren't in a peer set, you know? And so it wasn't something I could really share. So I wish I had a squad.
Hey, we did kind of get a squad together when you remember we had that streak of like when we were driving, finally got to start driving, where if there was a haunted place in White County,
or Cookeville, we branched out into other counties.
Yeah.
Most terrifying night of my life. Yeah.
Do you remember in Cassville, there was an old, it was an
I
old.
I know exactly what you're talking about. It's an old women's college, one of the first in the state. And we went and got in there.
Yes.
And the next night it burned down.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that distinctly. And I have some theories about that.
Are you going to tell everybody now, confess that you went back the next night?
I did not go back the next night. But I do have a theory about who did, and it could legitimately get people in trouble to this day, I think. So, no, I'm not going to. This is all inside baseball. Our listeners have no interest in this, but
yeah,
remind me. After we're off air, I will pitch my theory to you, my friend. But yeah, we started running these tours. There was a house called the Big House that was supposed to be haunted. We went and found the Big House, figured out how to get over there under the cover of darkness. And once people found out we had done this, they're like, can you take us? And so we said yes. And then we found out about a place called Crazy George's Bridge in Cookeville. And so we went to do that. And we went to just any old structure that we shouldn't have been in that might have had a ghost in it. We did do that in our teenage years. And I look back with regret on some of that because it was trespassing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was stupid. I mean,
it was stupid.
We could have easily died. Or what if we had run up on somebody, like Satanists, like here in Crossville where I'm at, dude, there are Satanists who have murdered people like in the past, like in the past 20 years.
Well, in God's providence, we never went ghost hunting in Cumberland County.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I have a lot of regrets about that, but that is the closest I've ever come to that. And it was pretty cool in the moment.
Yeah. We were not smart.
I'm glad you put that in the past tense. I don't think I've gotten any better.
Oh, man.
Well, Jared, on the, you know, moving down this chart here, what's good, true, and awesome? Where do we see common grace in this movie?
I think it gets friendship right. I think it gets, no, it doesn't get marriage right, but it does get, I mean, when that family came together, I mean, it was messy.
Yeah.
But I appreciated that. And sure. I appreciated the father's love for his son and the responsibility that he felt to get this done, like he had to do something. He had to protect his family. He had to protect his wife, his son, and not only that, but the kids in the face of, I mean, who's going to stand up against Dracula? Who's going to stand up against the Wolfman? I mean, if these things are really out there, who's going to do that? And these kids being willing to do that. I don't know. I think it gets courage right. Like they're obviously afraid, but they're willing to do it anyways.
Yeah.
You know, as my, I don't know if I'll watch this with my son one day or not. I guess I will when he's much older, but to just kind of show him what courage looks like, I guess.
Yeah. Well, to highlight a point you've already made, you know, the Wolfman in this movie is a reluctant monster. So when he's human, he's begging people to stop him.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody will listen to him. But, you know, when he turns into the monster, he's under Dracula's control and does all this awful stuff. But he's begging people throughout the whole movie, look, this thing's happening. I'm going to turn into a monster. There are these other monsters. You need to put a stop to this. And everybody laughs him off until the scene you already referenced. He's in a phone booth. He's just escaped from Dracula. He's trying to warn the town, hey, these monsters are coming. They're coming after your children. And he tells the cop dad, he's going to kill your son. And it's basically the last thing he says before he turns back into a werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what provokes the dad to get up and go investigate. You know, he's treated it as a quack report all up until this point. And yet when he hears that his son's in danger, that's what moves him to just do the due diligence to make sure it's not really a threat. And I thought that was a good thing to see, that this guy cared enough about his family not to let his preconceived notions get in the way of their safety.
Yeah, and he does it even while his friend is ragging him the whole time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that guy is just, I love that character, but he's just messing with him. He's messing with the mummy being escaping, and then he messes. I thought that was funny too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then, Jared, you know, the darker inverse of that question is, what's distorted, evil, and false in this movie? Where do you see idols? How do we subvert them?
I mean, like with most monster movies, there's this assumption that evil is outside, that the ultimate evil is. But this movie at least gets the messiness of school, peer relationships, gets the messiness of family life, marriage. It gets not all of it right, but there's no perfect savior in this. It's not like a superhero movie lots of times, you know?
Yeah.
It's messy, and I'd call it sin, but there is messiness among relationships. And but what it does, I mean, it acts like these other things, these other evils. But you know, Dracula is not the reason this marriage is falling apart.
Right.
You know, Dracula is not the reason that there's bullies, and not the reason that these boys are at each other's throats.
Uh-huh.
And you know what I'm saying? And so it gets, I don't know, it's more of a messy mixture, but it doesn't deal right with sin is basically the issue.
Yeah.
The sinfulness of the heart. It does display that. But then they just go and fight evil and everything's, you know, and they live happily ever after. It's kind of the ending.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess, Jared, you know, on the conclusion question, how do you see the gospel applying in this movie?
The gospel is better because it answers both the wickedness of the boys and the marriages, the adults, the boys and the adults, and the supernatural evils as well. You know, Christ takes care of not only what you and I can see, but the principalities we can't see. Yeah. You know, that's something that, you know, muttering a few, you know, and what is an amulet and muttering a few German words somehow blows a hole in, what is it, limbo, which whatever that is.
Which takes evil out of this world, but Frankenstein also gets to take a stuffed puppy because he's friends with a little girl now.
Yeah.
Hey, actually, I'm going to interject there for just a second. That's another one of the things in this movie that is a little bit deeper than you would expect. Have you ever seen I think it's 1931 Frankenstein movie?
No, I haven't.
Well, the classic scene there is that Frankenstein just doesn't know how the world works. So he comes upon a little girl playing by, it's either a pond or a river, and she befriends him. She doesn't know to be scared, so she befriends him. And they play this game where they're throwing flowers into the water, and mm-hmm. they're having a good time. And the monster doesn't really understand what's going on there. So he thinks, well, I'll throw the little girl in the water mm-hmm. and she'll like that too. But she drowns. Mm. And there's like a redemption to Frankenstein that takes place in this movie. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when I saw it happen in the movie, I say, oh, Christy, they're setting us up here because Frankenstein the monster walks up on that little girl sitting in her yard playing. And I was like, surely not. Surely they're not going to have him kill her. But she just becomes his friend. And there's no tragedy that comes out of it. In fact, at the end of the movie, you know, Frankenstein realizes that he needs to go with the other monsters into limbo, but she gives him her beloved stuffed animal to go with him. And so it was kind of a redemptive arc for Frankenstein's monster.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway, that is very much excursus. Continue on with your gospel analysis.
Dude, that's cool. That's a cool story. In that vein, I listened to a lore podcast episode that talks about the history of that, of the author. And where she come up with Frankenstein, where she got it from. I mean, there are actually scientists arguing that you could reanimate or bring people back to life with electricity, and they were electrocuting corpses. And I mean, it's just super creepy, crazy stuff.
Well, we're on a super tangent here, but do you know that Frankenstein was born out of basically a writer's retreat? Or rather, there were these famous writers who were sitting around on a country estate, and they decided to spend the night writing the scariest story they could and seeing which one would like write the scariest story.
No, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, so Mary Shelley was there.
Her husband was a poet, I think.
Wasn't he? Lord Byron and Percy Bysshe were there. I think I've got this right. And so they go sit down. And they have this project of, you know, writing a scary story. And not only did Frankenstein come out of that, but I want to say either Dracula or The Invisible Man, one of the other famous gothic horror movies came out of the same writing retreat.
That is really cool, man. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So I know I've taken this on multiple rabbit trails, but that's the real deal.
That's fascinating. Back to the gospel, you know, Christ is better because he takes care of all of our needs, our ultimate. In other words, he doesn't take care of just the evil that's out there. He takes care of the evil that's in our hearts. And not only that, but he promises us a glorified existence that is absent from evil. Like literally, we're going to live in a new heavens and new earth where there is no evil. I mean, I long for that day, man, where, you know, today, this morning I preached on 1 Peter 4, 1 through 11, and Peter makes a statement there in the very first verse of 1 Peter 4 about how he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin.
Yeah.
And he's making the argument to his hearers who are in suffering persecution that basically if the worst anybody can do to them is send them to heaven. Like for Christians, the worst persecution that you suffer in the flesh, you cease from sin. So that's the goal. You know, it really is freeing to think about how well, one day we're going to be with the Lord when we leave this world, and it'll be absent from sin, absent from death, absent from not only our own sin, but the sins of others. And not only that, but the sins of the devil, the sins of demons, and all of that's going to be removed from us. And that's something that I know this movie's not trying to get at that. These cosmic realities, they're just trying to tell a fun story, right? But, you know, the gospel offers something so much better.
Amen. Amen. Well, all right, Jared, is there anything else we want to throw into this episode covering the Monster Squad?
No, listeners, I want to encourage you to go check out that list. And if you enjoy it, be sure to share it with your friends, family. Try to watch some of those movies. Now, be aware of your own conscience but I hope that folks appreciate that. And yeah, let us know if there are movies you would take away, or if there are movies that you would add. Like if there's other movies you would add to that list, give us a shout out.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, we'll put that up on social media on Facebook. You can find us at the Pop Culture Quorum Deo podcast there. Or if you want to go to the direct link, it's PCCDpod. Same holds true for Twitter. We are on twitter.com/PCCDpod. You can also find us on Reddit, /r/PCCDpod. We'll put the links up there. I've also created a stream of trailers on YouTube as a playlist that you can watch. I'll stick those in as well. We hope you guys will enjoy this. I'll just tell you, I've never seen Monster Squad. Jared had this idea, and Monster Squad's on the list, and we thought, hey, let's do that. And I've benefited from it. Got to see a movie I enjoyed for the first time here in the one we're reviewing for this episode. So I hope you have a similar experience, listeners, as you go through those days of horror. And if you want to find, if you say, hey, I like the idea of having horror movies to watch during October, my conscience maybe isn't quite as restricted as what you and Jared used as the criteria to develop this list, you can go find Jody's list. It's not certainly not going to be aimed at immorality. It's just going to have a broader palette of movies, and it's at the October Scarathon. You can find that either Google searching or looking in your Facebook search. You can find them there. And again, we don't want you to do anything that would violate your conscience, but you might find some scary movies there you would like as well. Jared, where can they find you outside the world of our podcast?
You can find me on Jared H. Moore on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook at All Truth is God's Truth. I've actually got another podcast called All Truth is God's Truth. Check it out when you get a chance. And check out our companion pieces on Pop Culture Quorum Deo at Pathos. It's pathos.com/blogs/Pop Culture Quorum Deo. Come there and interact. And we actually got a Reddit. Jeff, what's the proper term for that?
It's a subreddit. It's what I was referencing just a minute ago at /r/PCCDpod. So you would go to reddit.com/r/PCCDpod, and you'll be in our subreddit.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. Yeah, engage us.
Yep, absolutely. Guys, we would appreciate if you take the time to leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. It's a big help to us knowing how we can adjust the show to fit what you're looking for. It also does an important work for us in telling iTunes, hey, you ought to let other people know about this show. And so we appreciate those of you who've left us reviews. Would be very thankful if you would take the time next time you're at a keyboard to do that. We would be very thankful. If you want to connect with me outside of the world of the podcast, it's at @WrightJeff on most social media platforms, and I'd love to hear from you. Jared, we're looking at going to see Venom, doing that for our next episode, right?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm so looking forward to that movie. I imagine it's going to be love or hate, you know. There's probably not going to be a middle ground, but we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. All right, then. Well, guys, we appreciate you being along with us for this ride through the Monster Squad film, and we will be back to talk to you next time on the Pop Culture Quorum Deo podcast.